Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. This weekend's show is going to be very much focused on recapping the PDAC conference in Toronto this last week and getting more so a lay of the land for resource investors in terms of where value, where opportunities are in the resource space for right now. The first 2 months of this year have been, I find, very different than the way we started last year for resources and commodities, where last year everything just kind of felt like it was running higher throughout the year. And even during PDAC, stuff just kept on running. This year, a lot more volatility. So I do think you need to be a little bit more selective in terms of what you're investing in the resource space. I am kicking off this show with Brian Lenny. Brian is the founder and editor of the Junior Stock Review, also runs the Field Notes video series on YouTube. I'll post a link in the show notes to both the Junior Stock Review and the Field Notes YouTube page. Brian, let's just get your recap of PDAC. I heard it was busy. I didn't make it this year. It's right over my son's birthday. But look, it must have been busy. The market, it still very much is in a bullish slant. But what was your takeaways from this year's PDAC?
It was great. And oh, actually, first, thanks for having me, Corey. It was great. The conference is always really good. But I think this year, especially, it was good because I decided to change up the way I do things. And I focused a little bit more on spur of the moment rather than being so completely scheduled into things. Like you said, the conference was busy. You know, oddly enough, and I was talking to someone else about this, is that, you know, the Monday was probably busier than the Sunday. And that's sort of contrary to 2 years past. And the only reason I can sort of point to is maybe that the generalist investor, or at least the generalist investor in Canada or in the Toronto region, just isn't there yet. The Monday was busy and there was a lot of industry people there. Even at, I did Metals Investors Forum too, and there was a lot of industry people there that you don't normally see. And you can see they're in the depths of talks about different projects, looking to make deals. You know, I think that's a really good sign about the health of the market and where things are and probably where they're headed. Getting back to how I changed things, you know, in years prior, I would have done the precious metals one-on-one meetings during PDAC, and like, that's great. There's a lot of value there. But I found last year I was cutting off kind of spur of the moment stuff on the floor to go run to a one-on-one. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to change that this year. I'm going to put the one-on-ones to the back burner, definitely schedule a bunch of meetings, but then use some time just to see what I come across and who sort of seeks me out too. And you know what, Corey, it definitely worked for the better. And so for at least next year, I'll probably do it the same way. So, you know, all in all, I came back, I had 7 or 8 ideas that, you know, definitely got past the sniff test or the first sniff test. And I'm going to be putting a lot of work into over the next couple of weeks to probably do follow-up meetings and some, you know, valuation myself. So it's quite exciting. I've got cash to deploy. You know, I've never been afraid of taking profits in the market, and that always means that I have a pretty good cash position and I can capitalize on new things that I'm seeing. And that's exactly where I am today.
So Brian, just touching on my comment to begin this, is the volatility in this sector and how I think it's much more of a stock picker's game right now for the quality stories. How do you feel about that? Is the market changed from last year? And how are you being even more selective, as I know you already are a pretty selective investor?
Well, you know, yeah, definitely for me, my process never really changes. I would say in the market, you know, you still see some mediocre stories catching a bid. And I don't necessarily see that changing unless the gold price, silver price, probably copper price go across the board on the metal prices. You sort of take a real seat back. You're certainly right that the volatility is there. But I think if people are getting scared out of this kind of volatility, then, you know, you don't have much conviction in the stuff that you're invested or speculating in. And thus, you know, it's probably rightfully so that you get bumped out of your positions because, you know, people like me want to take advantage of that. Yeah. So I would say that, you know, people that have high conviction that are picking good companies can sort of wade through whatever comes at you. And unless we see a big drawdown where you see the metal prices, you know, whatever they may be, go back 20, 25%, you know, then I think these little 10% swings are sort of nothing, and they might seem abrupt. But then again, I still think that's more akin to an investor that hasn't been in this that long. If you're a junior mining investor and you have been for more than probably 3 or 4 years, you're definitely accustomed to these sorts of swings. And so, you know, I think you have to expect it, especially in the world we live in, where, you know, there's war, conflicts, social, financial, there's everything right now. And I think you got to expect things to be tumultuous, but that's opportunity for those that have the confidence and the cash to deploy.
Okay, let's go through metal by metal and discuss where you're seeing opportunity. Let's start with gold. Look, gold is still doing very well this year. I think it's up around 20% this year. GDX and GDXJ are lagging that a little bit, but I've noticed the higher quality companies and the producers are still doing well, while some of the explorers and even some companies that I don't think should be getting a bid, they are, kind of what you alluded to earlier. But where are you seeing opportunities in the gold space in terms of the equities?
So for me, I'm pretty comfortable or set in the developers that I think I'm going to ride through this bull market. I still look and see if there's any value that pops up, any abnormal opportunities, but there hasn't really been. But where I've been rotating the cash is actually into some select exploration companies. And I think, you know, for me, it's not necessarily the grassroots stuff. I definitely like to see a few drill results before I'm willing to play or go on the project generation side. But I think, you know, from what I've seen, there's some opportunities and there's some disconnects in valuation. And so that's on the gold side. That's pretty much where you would see the portfolio deployed. Just made a new pick coming out of PDAC yesterday. And to me, that company is definitely undervalued. And I think because they had their last result basically come out during PDAC, that the market sort of missed it. And so maybe I took it as a very good thing. And so we'll see where that goes when the market catches up after being away for a couple of days. But yeah, on the gold front, on the precious metals front, to me, it's that exploration side of things where I think there's opportunity.
Okay, let's dive into that a little bit more. Certain jurisdictions that you're interested in, or when you say maybe not the grassroots exploration plays, does that mean they have a resource or working towards a resource? What's your criteria now for exploration plays?
Yeah, so I'm not too concerned about jurisdiction, although a move that I'm probably going to make in the next week or so, I'm still sort of going back and forth, is very much a jurisdictional move. And it's really just price that I'm sort of thinking about. But, you know, for me, I'm sort of willing to go almost anywhere the price is right. And for me, like I said, I'm not looking at somewhere where, you know, it's a $5 million market cap and they are doing, you know, grassroots exploration work in wherever. It doesn't even matter. That's not really, unless that's a project generation company, that's not really what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something that's had probably one or two phases of drilling, you know, probably over 10,000 meters in total that I can sort of see and kind of guess where I think it might be going. And if that value or that value disconnect is there, that's what I want to do. And that's what my pick yesterday was all about, was I think there was a disconnect because they already had some great drill results. Their share price had sort of drifted down after, because their phase one program had ended last year. And so with the market sort of correcting, there was that opportunity. So that's sort of what I'm looking for. I know that might be vague, but I can't sort of give you too much more because I just made that pick. But yeah, I'm just looking for disconnects, and the more information I can gain, the more confident I am in the picks, or the probability being more towards me than it is usually in exploration. And I think that's about, you know, as much as you can hope for, and especially good management is hard to find. So, you know, you want to stay in that top 20% of people out there to give yourself the best chance.
Is there a market cap sweet spot that you're looking at? You mentioned you're not going down to the 5 million market cap companies, but quite frankly, I'm not finding any of those out there right now. The whole market has revalued, and what was 5 million market cap a couple years ago is 20, 30, maybe even 50 million now. So is there a reasonable market cap that you're sticking to by saying there's still value here, but it's not overvalued?
You know, Corey, I usually do this inversely. So, like, I don't start at market caps and break down. I always like is I probably because I'm so apt at being bottom up. I always start with the company and then look at the valuation and then do a comparison. And so, yeah, like I'm not focusing necessarily on a certain market cap. I just want to see the disconnect. That's the biggest thing. So, in talking to the CEOs, you know, the information that they show me. You know, what's to come, the amount of money they have. In some cases, you know, like who some of the like the smart money that's already in the stock sort of, you know, gives some validation to it. And then I look at the price and say, oh, you know what, compared to this or that, because exploration isn't as straightforward as something with a resource or something with a technical study. You know, those sorts of companies are more cut and dry, I would say, on how you do the valuation. You know, the exploration companies definitely take more of a speculative view on how you want to value them. And so yeah, like that's probably in third place in the stuff that I was looking at and where I see that opportunity. And again, hopefully that's not too vague, but that's just how I go about it. You know, there isn't any specific market cap or anything that I try to focus on. It's always the delta.
Okay, what about the developers then? We keep hearing how there's a big disconnect in terms of where metals prices are, how much money these projects make, and what the companies are trading at. My problem with that is that we're not going to get all these built. And quite frankly, these aren't going to be built tomorrow to take advantage of this metals price. Some are multi-years down the road, so they do get a discount. And quite frankly, again, not everything's going to be built. So in terms of developers, what metrics are you looking at, and how are you running the numbers, adjusting some economics to current prices or at least around current prices?
Hey, Corey, you bring up some really good points there. And I think one of the biggest, when you ever hear someone talking about valuations of developers, I think you need to, one of the biggest qualifying questions is ask what metal price they're using. And I think that'll, and not only that, but what discount rate, because those two factors are probably going to dictate a lot. And if you're hyper aggressive, I guarantee you're using at least spot, or in some cases, I've heard some commentators using, you know, $6,000 gold to evaluate the companies that they're investing in, which is, I think, but the dumbest thing I've ever heard. For me, I'll definitely take a look at what the company's worth at spot. I'm likely if the metal price, like I think this year is probably a really good example. Where we had a huge ramp up in January in the gold price, or at the end of December up into the end of January, we had a huge ramp up from, you know, the high 4,000s right up to about like 5,500. And in that case, there's no way I'm using 5,500 as the gold price for the developers that I have. It went up too quickly. And to me, I want to see some consolidation or some time at that $5,500 before I'm going to use it in any of my models. You know, at that time, I think I was using $4,500, which was a couple hundred dollars below what the spot was in December. And I always use something, I use at least a 10% discount rate, in some cases 15, depending on where it's located, to sort of get an idea of where things are or how they're valued. Now, if you're using $4,500 or even $4,000 gold, and you use a 10 plus discount rate, then I could, and then if you get into the timing aspect, which you very rightly bring up, you know, some of these projects aren't going to be developed for, in some cases, another 10 years, another 5 years. And so you have to incorporate that into your discount cash flow model, or at least I would. And that gives you a better idea of what this thing is actually worth. And then when, if you take it from that sort of lens, I think it's you're more likely to say that things are probably more fairly valued. And so, you know, again, there's some subjectivity in there too. But I would say that those best of best projects, I think you can be on the more aggressive side. And I would say there is a gap there, but the gap isn't like 300 or 400% like it was at the beginning of the cycle. You know, to get that sentiment change, to get that initial real big bump, you had to be a buyer when nobody else was interested. And I think that's what people sort of miss. And so for me, I would say that we're at or near that sort of fairly valued to undervalued, just depending on how you want to shape things, what gold price you want to use, what discount price you want to use, and how much you're going to incorporate the time to production is going to be. And then you sort of go from there. Like I said, like the developers for me, like I've got the horses that I want to ride moving forward, and they've done exceptionally well. And I think they're going to continue to do that through this volatility. And then I'm rotating that cash. I rotated it last year. I think we talked about it. I rotated some profits from precious metals into copper, and that has turned out really well. And I think, copper is probably on that precipice of having, a big step change if we're able to maintain or definitely move ahead in the copper price. And the other side to that is I think exploration is still mispriced in a lot of ways, and that's the opportunity I'm trying to take advantage of.
Okay, we will get into copper, but any names you can share with us? Who are some of the developers that you hold? You've already ridden higher, but you're continuing to hold.
I think Thesis Gold definitely pops out. The latest advancement of AngloGold Ashanti taking a 5% position, I think tells you how important Thesis is overall in the sector, but certainly in the Tutagon. For them to come in there to create some competitive tension with Centerra, who has a 9.9% position, I think is really good for Thesis shareholders. And like I said, there's that competitive tension now where, Centerra seems to be asleep at the wheel to let, arguably one of the hottest gold miners in the world come into your backyard and take a position. So it'll be really interesting to see how that moves forward. And I think it's a tremendous validation on Lawyers Ranch, but also on the management team. Ewan's done such a great job progressing that forward. I think, Liberty Gold, considering where they are in the development cycle, and in permitting, they're in that fast track 41 permitting in the US, considering the size of it, considering how confident I am that, John Gillingham is the man to sort of push that forward. I think Liberty Gold is one of those companies that'll definitely be able to wade through this volatility. And if you're able to pick up that cheaply, I think you're doing, exceptionally well. I think those two probably stand out the most on the gold side. Yeah.
Okay, let's move over to silver real quick. Any interest in silver stocks? As silver has been very volatile, SIL has actually outperformed silver year to date, but we do have to remember just how well silver did at the tail end of last year, too. So, anything in the silver space that you like?
For me, I concentrate on the exploration at this point. I think, one of the issues is when a metal is so hot and has so much speculative interest, it's really hard, especially to buy the developers or even the producers to a certain extent, because everybody's so forward-looking. The way I'm playing silver is through Abrassilver. And as I've been an investor in Abrasįlver for a long time now, almost 10 years, buying that when it was like 2 and 3 cents. And so that's obviously been a huge win for myself in the newsletter. But right now, the way I'm playing silver is through exploration. And I think I've gotten both of them, maybe the two best exploration companies with a silver component out there right now. Certainly one has performed like it is in their last drill result. And I'm talking about Group 11 is the big one with the 50 meters of 330 grams per ton. Their Ballywire discovery just seems to get better and better. And this new pick that I have is a gold silver exploration bet. And I think it has all the legs from what I've seen from the phase one drilling and into phase two. This thing looks like a high grade silver discovery story too. So we'll see how that develops, but that's where I see the most value is, picking the exploration companies, especially, you talk about Group 11. Everybody gets sort of mesmerized or turned off by the lead zinc, and they don't even realize the high grade silver and copper component to it that's developing. And so I really think that's going to push Group 11 to the next level over the next few months. And they're just in the process of raising more money, and they're going to be able to go at this full bore. So I'm quite pleased and quite excited to see how that develops over this year.
So, Brian, we've talked a lot about Abrasįlver. I want to quickly touch on that one because, look, we have them on the show a lot for updates. We had them on earlier this week, too. But they just came out with some news on Monday, I believe, of this week that seemed really positive. They received RIGI approval in Argentina for their flagship project, but the stock has sold off on the back of that. It's down about 20%. That being said, the stock has been on an absolute tear this year, last year, the year before, all that. Why do you think this little bit of weakness is happening on the back of what seemed like positive news?
It's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. That's, to me, guys like John, like David O'Connor, those are guys that you want to be invested in. And for me, like, it's a long-term sort of thing because I'm pretty confident that Dablilos in sort of any scenario is going to be bought. And so that's sort of the end game for me. You know what might happen, and again, this is just me thinking spur of the moment, is just you've got a lot of weird things going on in Mexico. Mexico being sort of the heart of the silver story worldwide. And then, you know, what happened with Vizsla, what happened with the cartel attacks, you know, basically, I guess now a couple of weeks ago, you know, there's a lot of reasons there for money to flee. And maybe that money is, you know, it fleed and then now it's coming back. I don't know. And because I definitely saw Abra Silver share price shoot up after the Vizsla story in mid-January there, or whenever that, or the end of January when that was announced. And maybe that money's returning or going somewhere else. You know, it's really hard to sort of try to understand what the market does sometimes. But for me, you know, it's nothing has changed with Abra Silver. The announcement on Riggy is excellent and should be further confidence that, you know, that the economics that they presented in their studies is going to be legit. And for those that are looking at it, then, you know, price disconnects or price volatility is opportunity. And so if you're not fully allocated and you think that Abra Silver is a good investment or good speculative vehicle, such as I do, then maybe that depressed share price is opportunity.
All right, let's get into copper then. Look, you've been talking copper for the last little while. Last year, we like copper too. I really like the setup. I like how gradually higher copper has moved. The stocks have done very well, especially the majors. Where are you seeing opportunity in the copper space? Understanding these stocks still have done well, but they haven't done nearly as well as the precious metal stocks over the last couple of years.
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, I think the thing with copper is that we had a couple false starts going back over the last couple of years where the price hit around $5 and then kind of precipitously fell, and, you know, not even maintaining really a week there. But we're a couple months at $6 now, or around, let's say around $6 per pound. And I think that matters. And the longer that this price level is sustained, I think the more confidence is the market's going to be that this may be the new base or the new launch pad for whatever's ahead. For me, last year, I was investing in what I thought were really good developers with disconnects in their market cap, Hot Chili, Surge Copper, and I did end up picking up Arizona Sonoran, which was very fortuitous considering that Hudbay bought them. Those were the ways that I was playing the copper market, and obviously, I still own Hot Chili and I still own Surge, and I think that the way forward is up, especially with Surge getting added to the BC Critical Minerals Office. They raised a bunch of money and the share price reacted in a very positive way. That is a very bullish sign to me about how the market is perceiving where Surge is going. And I think it's really kind of gone under the radar in being in BC and maybe for a number of other cases or points. But I think there's good opportunity there. The province is recognizing it as a critical project. It's really super simple, single pit, very basic metallurgy. And the management team led by Leif Nielsen are top notch. And so I think that really puts, you know, a company like Surge on the right path. And then Hot Chili is the exact same thing. They're heading towards feasibility study. They're now cashed up to basically deliver that. And they're located in, you know, arguably the best copper jurisdiction in the world, it being Chile. And they've got one of those production profiles that separate them. And you know what? Like last year, I identified that disconnect in price to value. And that has certainly rewarded me and the newsletter. And I think they're primed to come out of the feasibility study to do a deal on Costa Fuego and likely do a deal on the water project, Cuasco Water, too, which, you know, should add a ton of value to their bottom line. So the developers is where I was, where was where I, what I've played in copper. And I'm certainly looking for, you know, new stories, and I wouldn't be opposed to development stories. And that's actually out of the companies that I've got a couple ideas that came out of PDAC that I need to follow up on, and they're on the development side, but they're development stories that have good exploration, and that isn't always easy to find. And I think, you know, this one company could be a gem. So we'll see.
Okay, I just want one more question on this is exit strategy. Outside of these stocks just completely revaluing and going through multiple expansion in terms of share price, are you waiting for takeovers then? Because it is few and far between that copper companies actually build their assets because of how expensive they are.
I think, you know, certainly it's built into my thesis for the companies that I do own that they'll likely be taken out. But I've got different scenarios that I work into that. And M&A is usually not at the top of my list. I think the only sort of only company in my portfolio that I have as M&A as like the preeminent reason for owning right now is probably Orion, because I think we probably talked about before, I think that Rupert's going to buy them. But Orion's got a lot of got everything else going for it too, top management, top exploration. But I would say M&A is the reason why you absolutely want to own that right now. Looking at the copper companies, I see ways forward for them to realize their, underlying value outside of M&A. And I think when you look at a world that is deglobalizing, I think it becomes more evident that we'll likely see these projects sort of move ahead, even if it isn't necessarily with a senior or mid-tier diversified miner sort of leading the way. And that assumption may or may not be right, but I just tend to think that, these critical mineral supply chains are going to mean more and more to each individual country. And when we have infighting, even in between allies, I mean, I'm talking about something like the Canada and the US or the US and Europe and blah, blah, blah. I think these things become more and more evident. And if you look at the projects that I'm invested in, I would say that there's realistic chance that these things could be built by the people that have already ownership. But we'll see. Like I said, M&A is definitely a way that works its way into my thesis, but I could see myself exiting if I don't see that endpoint clear.
All right, Brian, we'll wrap it up here. We're out of time for this segment. As always, thanks for your time. And again, you want to follow along with Brian, check out the Junior Stock Review website or Field Notes on YouTube. Again, I'll post both links in the show notes. Brian, great having you on. Thanks for the recap. Thanks for some insights on what you're investing in. And everyone, stick around. I'm going to be right back, continuing to focus on opportunities in the resource sector.
Thanks for having me, Corey.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.